Hi, Pacers fans. This is Victor Oladipo, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Well, we welcome you in here to an end of the season podcast. I know that you and I certainly hope that we were previewing some kind of game, Jeremiah, against the Toronto Raptors in round two. Once the Pacers season ended in game seven, you and I both kind of wanted to take a little bit of time and reflect on it and not make any hasty knee-jerk type of reactions, because it was an emotional series. The Pacers nearly got by Cleveland and had a pretty historic opportunity that they were right on the doorstep of. They weren't able to accomplish. What we didn't realize when we were taking a week to let everything kind of sit is that we would also be doing this after the Raptors season ended to Cleveland as well. But, we've had now a little over a week. It was the Sunday previous to this one. And I know you and I both had the opportunity to quickly head over to the St. Vincent Center and chat with some of those guys as they were wrapping up their exit interviews with Kevin Pritchard and Nate McMillan and the rest of the team. Your thoughts on, we're not going to sit here and review the entire season as a whole. We did that on a previous podcast, but it was interesting to me because it was a little bit of a sadness type of feeling, in that it was hard to believe that this run was over. And in some ways, it's amazing that it got as far as it did if you were to look back at the beginning of the season. Kind of an abrupt halt as well to close it.
The end of every season is always difficult, and I can remember, think about this, 41 road games every regular season, and then you have playoff games as well. And I can almost remember the plane flight home from the final game, as vividly as any trip over the course of my time traveling. I remember the very first season that I traveled as the sideline reporter, and it was a trip home from Memphis. And it was the season that, it ended. You could have gone to the playoffs, and instead it ended out of the playoffs. And then I remember game seven in Toronto, where you were in a similar situation as this year, and you had bags packed for a second round playoff series, and you lost game seven, and you were disappointed, and you flew back the next day. And then, of course, last season, the final game was not on the road. It was at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but I remembered walking out of the fieldhouse thinking, man, I'd like to at least go back to Cleveland one more time and give this another shot. But instead it was a four-game sweep by 16 total points. But the trip home from Cleveland Sunday night after game seven was difficult. The locker room was difficult to, do my job, I guess I should say. Now, you go in there all the time after losses, and in the regular season, guys are down. But this was different, and I think we talked about this on Pacers Weekly. It felt like a college locker room. It felt like a high school, after a high school sectional championship game, where you think back immediately, what could we have done in this point in the game? What if only I'd have hit this shot? And guys were really down. And, it took me probably about a week. And I could say right now, even watching a little bit of that Raptors-Cavs series, it makes me still not over it, because you just can't help but think what could have been if they would have just done this here or this there. And it's hard to, just immediately say, oh, it was such a fantastic season, because it was, because you were so close. And so I think the week off was good from the podcast's perspective to just think about things a little bit. And now the sun's been out for a few days, so you're starting to feel a little bit like summer. But I do say, after three straight seasons of making it to the first round but then losing, I think that I think I speak for everyone in the organization. You want that taste of May playoff basketball. So, I'm curious, you've been in the building almost every day since then. I was there for a couple of days last week, and we heard from Kevin Pritchard in the season-ending press conference, but it's almost a feeling shared amongst the employees, I think, as well.
No, it is. I can just think back to a meeting we had with some of the higher-ups in our company and some of those guys who have been here for a long time. There have also been pieces on Pacers.com, Mark Boyle referring to this as it being, maybe the most enjoyable year of his career. Other people have echoed that have been here for a long time. And look, obviously that's subjective. The Pacers have had seasons in the NBA the NBA Finals. They have had plenty of Eastern Conference runs. This team didn't have that level of success. But your comments in the locker room are interesting, because they're sort of the vibe that I got talking with some of the players briefly after the season ended the following day in the St. Vincent Center. There was some genuine frustration, sadness, maybe a little bit of remorse, anger. And we've had the chance to interact with some of those guys after seasons end before. And I say this all year long and then I keep doing it. I don't mean to compare it to years past, but I think it gives such perspective. I mean, there were a lot of guys who were still really ticked off. I had an interesting conversation with Corey Joseph, in fact, in the elevator, and I won't go into some of the specific details, but he was still really frustrated that the series came to an end. And this wasn't on camera. This wasn't, you know, a staged interview. This was just, caught an elevator with him kind of thing. And he was still really, really frustrated. And I think all of that, though, is really good. It's tough to get over. It's tough to lose in a way the Pacers did. Kevin Pritchard referenced, you know, and I've got a pretty good idea who these guys are. There were a couple players in the locker room who were in tears after the season ended. And obviously that's very difficult for players, for fans, coaches, GMs, us down the line to have, you know, what has been sort of a magical season come to an end, to have a real opportunity, not only to make some history and beat LeBron in the first round, but, you know, you look at Toronto and the rest of the playoffs and what was, you know, potential for opportunity beyond that. All of that's difficult, but it's all for good reason, I think. And you want your season to end, if it's going to end, without a championship, where you feeling really frustrated, you know, that you potentially left an opportunity on the table. There's no doubt this team overachieved just every expectation, but I think it can be kind of a healthy thing to hit the offseason with a lot of frustration in mind. Kenny Smith was talking about this yesterday on the TNT show. He was hopeful that Philadelphia got swept for Philadelphia because that would take some of the good taste out of their mouth of a great year. And I think, you know, coming as close as the Pacers did to knocking off LeBron and making some real history, making the second round, and who knows beyond there, I think some of that could be healthy here as we hit the offseason.
Yeah, I heard those same comments from Kenny Smith yesterday, and I felt that way about the Pacers. And I think back to something that I think it's Mark Monteith who said it numerous times, and I know he's doing some great work in the season wrap-up articles on Pacers.com, but he often has talked about championship-type teams or runs that have been sustained over time, and it's a process. I hate to use that word, but you almost have to do it in stages, and you get to the first round, and then you win a series, and then you knock on the door, maybe then you get to a conference finals, and it rarely just happens from nothing to all of a sudden you're playing in a conference finals. And you could counter my argument or my point by saying, well, yeah, this team, they went, you know, to the first round the last 2 years, so now this is three straight first round exits. But I do think you pretty much have to just close the book on an era, a time in Pacers basketball at the end of the 2016-2017 season and say it started new, it started fresh in 2017-18, and it exceeded all those expectations. And in a way, they made a 2 years in 1 type of jump. You could even say maybe that Kevin Pritchard and the front office, if they looked at the start of this season, what they did this season might have been okay for 2 or 3 seasons from now. So they were able to make that jump, and then now this team is in position to then maybe make that next jump next season. And the Eastern Conference landscape, you can't say that every team has to go in that way because the landscape can change. LeBron could go to the West. LeBron might eventually get old. I'm not sure that that's actually possible. I think he has some
it's
secret vitamins
at some
that he is still 18 years old for the rest of his life. Like I said, you don't know what's going to happen, but the experience and the disappointment, seeing Victor Oladipo in the gym at 8 o'clock Monday morning, you know, I was just wanting to do nothing that week. And I did a few things, and obviously I thought it was good to come in on Monday and talk to some of the guys as they left town, many of them, and to hear from Kevin Pritchard the next day I thought was really good as well, because before you just forget about the season, it was, you know, it was worth hearing from Kevin Pritchard and also Nate McMillan. But the fact that Victor, you know, was in the gym that early, and basically most of the guys, I think, at their exit meetings, even some of the younger players, were told, get away for about a week and a half or 2 weeks and maybe start coming back around the week prior to Memorial Day. And everyone has a different schedule, and guys will go home. But the ones that have a future and have an idea that they want to continue to get better, I think even with them, the goal was to take a couple of weeks off. But the disappointment of the Game 7 was fresh in Victor Oladipo's mind. And once again, I've said this so many times on this podcast this season, Victor set the tone for the rest of the team. And I don't think it's necessary, actually, to have been in the gym at 8 o'clock Monday morning. But it is, I guess, symbolic a little bit. And I don't know what he's done in the time since then. I know he's been on TNT, and he will get some downtime as well. But I think that he is in a position to almost, I think even to football, sometimes I can remember, Peyton Manning getting receivers together in the summer. And I think, not knowing what Victor's plans are, I see this being a very, very good summer in terms of maybe gathering guys together, working out with him in Miami. I know that was well documented what he did last offseason. And he'll be here, obviously, some more than last season because he was traded in the middle of the offseason. But I think Victor sets the tone. I think the disappointment of coming so close but not advancing to the second round will help. And it'll continue to have this something to prove mentality. Although I'm not going to say it next season like I did this season, because that was the theme, I think, of this season. And we'll have to find a new theme for next season.
Yeah, and you mentioned Victor there, and I think it's good to hit upon him here in a little bit more detail here on this podcast. Who knows with him? Obviously, everybody saw the text to his trainer and all of that, and you just love the kind of leader he is. You watch him on the TNT show with Barkley and Ernie and Shaq the other day, and of course you love all the things he does, but he's always been such a late bloomer, and you look at his IU career and when he bloomed in college, he wasn't really on the radar going into college, he wasn't really on the radar his freshman year, and then all of a sudden his sophomore year was like, okay, maybe this guy could get drafted, and he started hitting some radars, and then boom, he's the second pick, and who's to say, he was told his ceiling this time last year was about what it was, and he made another jump, and who's to say that can't happen again this offseason, where he could go from top 20, top 15, wherever you want to put him, into the top 10. I think you see some of his raw ability. Just, look at game one against Cleveland, his ability to accelerate, get by guys. People couldn't stay in front of him, so they had to back 4 feet off, and then when they would, he was nailing the three. It's going to be difficult for him to take another huge jump, but with what we've seen with his dedication, his determination, his late bloomer, just generally that's how he has evolved as a basketball player. I think it's very possible that he has an offseason and comes back as an even better player. It's not going to be easy. He set the bar so high, and just catching that bar again next season, I think, in a lot of ways, would be a success for him. And when you consider that, and you consider where the offseason was last year, there was so much unknown. You didn't know where the franchise was headed. Larry Bird had just stepped down. Kevin Pritchard moved up. Paul George then quickly informed the Pacers that he would like to be traded. And you just consider all of the, anxiety, I think, that the fan base felt. And you consider this. Your best player now, Victor Oladipo, you wouldn't trade for Paul George. Not only that, he's 2 years younger. Not only that, you've got a guy who just turned 22 like a week ago who, potentially promises to have a really big part of your core, and you look at your three best players, and we'll get into Miles and DeMontis, I think in a little bit, and of course I know there's been some frustration that Miles basically had a stagnant year and didn't make a jump up, and I'm going to make the case for him a little bit later in this podcast, but your core is just turned 26, just turned 22, and a couple of months ago turned 22, and I think that is such a positive as well, there's an offseason to come. There's a draft to come. There's free agency and the trade market and all of that. And you know that Kevin Pritchard, if he can, is going to be aggressive. Look, I think you have to – I think as a fan, I hope that you feel happy for the season that you had, able to enjoy the season that you had. If you're frustrated at the playoffs, the players were too. I think that's absolutely a natural feeling. You move the lens back a little bit and you go, man – considering where the Pacers could be when they had to deal with what they did last offseason, I mean, this is almost maybe an ideal scenario. And I think, you have Kevin Pritchard has deserved absolutely nothing but the ultimate trust in him. That move they made, not just that, but Darren Collison, Corey Joseph. I mean, everything he did turned to gold. And I think if you're a Pacers fan, you can look at the free agent market and not see a lot and then wonder how Indiana might get better. I think Kevin Pritchard has more than earned your trust. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when they get to that point in the offseason. But this core that they have, Kevin Pritchard's history, I think you have to be extremely optimistic.
And a couple of other quick thoughts on Victor Oladipo, in the St. Vincent Center the day after the season came to an end. He was wearing a white Michael Jordan sweatshirt, and it on the back said, "We need leaders." And, you know, this was a team that needed a leader, and they got one in Victor Oladipo. I think they got more than they could have even imagined last offseason, and you have your best player as your leader. That is so crucial. Now, it doesn't have to happen that way. You can have your best player also be, you know, someone who's kind of quiet and has another person who maybe leads the team, and you could think back to maybe the David West role on the Pacers teams that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. But Victor Oladipo is a leader. That's my first point. My second is he is far from satisfied. And I wanted to share a story that head athletic trainer Josh Corbeil, best in the business, shared with me during the Cleveland series. And I was going to bring it up during one of the broadcasts, and I just never found the time or the situation that I thought it worked. And as for those who listen to the podcast, well, it's a little bonus nugget for you guys. Before every game, of course, every player pretty much has some sort of tape or treatment done. And, you know, I got to the point during the course of this season, you know, we had Imagine Dragons as sort of a theme on Fox on some of the early games. And I was listening to a lot of the different Imagine Dragons songs in the afternoons when I would get ready. In the middle of the season, I had a sit-down interview with Victor Oladipo, and I don't even know how it came up, but I asked him about movies he'd seen or something like that, and he said, "I just saw The Greatest Showman, best musical ever." And so then we went and watched it as a family, and then the soundtrack is amazing. And then I started hearing him sing songs from the soundtrack on the bus or in the locker room at different times. And so I started to get to where there are a few of these songs that, you know, I like to listen to get me excited on a game day, maybe an afternoon I'm getting ready before a game. And A Million Dreams is, you know, the one that I first started listening to. And you think about dreaming of, you know, being a champion. And it's completely different. And this is maybe going to get a little sappy, so I apologize in advance. But I was talking with Josh Corbeil when we made this feature. After the sit-down interviews, it just came out that we sort of made the theme of the feature Victor Oladipo, The Greatest Showman. So I'm sitting with Josh on the bus to one of the playoff games in Cleveland, and I said, "I listened to The Greatest Showman soundtrack today, this afternoon." He said, "Oh, Victor and I listen to that every day when I'm treating him or taping him before every game." And I said, "What?" You know, you think about an NBA player and the songs they may listen to, and you may have this thought. And he said, "Yeah, we start with A Million Dreams, and we listen to that, and then it's Rewrite the Stars." So this is Victor Oladipo, your team leader, your MVP, your all-star, and he's listening to A Million Dreams, and he's listening to Rewrite the Stars, and the day after the team is eliminated in the playoffs, he's in the gym at 8 o'clock working. I just don't see this player, this person that we actually know quite well when you date back to his time at Indiana University, I don't see him being satisfied with the first round exit. With what he's done this season, the leap he made from last season, and what can be done in the future. There are so many things that are just kind of, it seems to be perfect for this team moving forward. And I thought I'd share that, but I do think that says a lot about Victor and maybe even his motivation, his personality, and where this team can go in the future.
And you look at where it can go in the future. I guess now is a decent enough time to bring this up. We wanted to look at our pick three, and we want to make this looking forward. You know, if you are listening to this and you are hoping for a season in review type of podcast, we've summed up, I think, the playoff series pretty well here. And we had a full podcast dedicated to looking back at the 2017-2018 season. So you can scroll a couple back if you're looking for that. I think you and I were both in agreement that we're over a week past the season coming to an end. It's time to look forward. So let's take a look at our pick three, which this week is going to be players who potentially could show the most improvement next season. We obviously saw a huge jump from Victor Oladipo to Montis Sabonis in that regard this past season, and those were players coming from different teams. Obviously, we don't know how the free agency, how draft, how the trade market is going to unveil. So we are just going to say, you know, under the assumption that the guys that are currently on the roster are there next year, look at our most improved players in for the following year, potential coming up. And I'll let you start.
Yeah, and just to clarify with this pick three, we're going to say we're not going out on a on a limb here to say that Victor Oladipo is the NBA's most improved player for this season. It'll be announced at some point during this summer. And the Pacers have, as an organization, I'm going to have to do some research on this. I don't know that anybody's had more most improved player awards in the NBA than the Pacers. And so if we said, if everyone's back, who could be the most improved Pacer? Everyone won't be back. And I don't even know if my selection for sure what his future would be. But I think there's a chance he's back. And I think there's a chance he makes great strides. And that would be Glenn Robinson III. And I just think that the Pacers didn't have a lot of injuries this season. Miles Turner had a few that were problematic. Darren Collison missed some games in February. But Glenn Robinson III is one that really did impact the team and it impacted him personally. I mean, I can remember being in the St. Vincent Center when he broke his ankle, and it was just a feeling of devastation from everyone. And that was about 1 week into training camp, and not everybody even knew Glenn that well, but they knew you don't have to be around him very long to know what a great guy he is and how hard he had worked to get in this position to maybe make a leap forward. And you know, who knew whether he would even play this year? And he came back and he was able to play. And I think he would even admit that he wasn't himself at the end of the season. He didn't quite get back to 100%, but he at least got that mental block out of his, or that part out of his mind where he knows he can play and come down and have a full offseason of work. I think Glenn Robinson III was going to be the backup three who would have even started some games if Bojan Bogdanović was not playing well. He was in position to be maybe the guy who would, even though Bojan played better defense than anybody thought, maybe be on the court in the fourth quarter for defensive purposes. It didn't happen. Bojan had to do a lot of heavy lifting. Lance played a little bit of the three. They had to mix and match things a little bit. But with an offseason of work, if Glenn Robinson III is able to come back, he of course has an uncertain contract situation, and he has to obviously think about his future, and the Pacers have to think about theirs as well. But he could make great strides, and if he just gets back to where he was the day that he was injured, I think he's in a great spot. But in talking with him briefly last week, he said something about everything happens for a reason, and he was still grinning. And you know, he could be someone who was maybe bitter about not playing much in that playoff series, but he said something about, you know, how could you be down on the season when everyone had so much fun and it was such a great thing that was started here? And, you know, just being around Glenn, I just hope for the best. And so maybe this is more hope for the most improved than a prediction per se. But I know he'll work hard. I know he has the attitude. And I know if he can get back to the same level of health, he could be most improved. And that's a spot where the Pacers, I think, could stand to get a little improvement in that three spot.
Yeah, I certainly think that's the case. And I think Bojan, you know, covered that gap better than most would have predicted, especially on the defensive end. And, you know, I think a pretty good chance that he is back. But obviously, long term, you're still looking for help at the wing, regardless of where Bojan fits in. So I think Glenn obviously has the potential to have a real opportunity there. My pick's going to be Miles Turner, and this is who I think a lot of people want to talk about in the offseason. And for me, I get some of the frustration in that he didn't really make a jump from year two to year three. His numbers are pretty similar. You know, nothing really jumped out of the page. I think a lot of people wanted him to make a big leap, and it just didn't happen. And I know that this is not what you want to hear, but my biggest frustration with those who get really down on Miles would be, you know, there's a lot of people who make the comment correctly that, you know, oh, look, Orlando wasn't patient with Victor Oladipo. This was a guy with a ton of talent. They gave him a couple years. He was good, not great, and then gave up on him. And this is why you don't give up on talent. And some guys just need a few years to figure out the NBA game. Then those same guys are frustrated at the time, a 21-year-old Miles Turner, who could be a junior, senior in college, for not making those type of jumps as well. And look, I think everybody, including Miles, he's even said this, you know, he was hoping for a bigger 2017-2018 than he had. He dealt with a little bit of injury. If you remember, he missed some time at the beginning of the year and then missed some time a little bit later in the year as well, which could have hampered things. Obviously, Miles needs to get stronger. Obviously, he needs to. He's never going to be a presence in the post, but he needs to be able to play Steven Adams, Tristan Thompson, those type of guys, and, you know, not get dominated down low. That obviously needs to happen in the offseason, and he needs to get better at it. But still, how many solid three-point shooting, rim-protecting centers that are 21, 20, just turned 22 years old out there in the NBA. There's not many. And this guy has so many promising skill sets. And I know it's frustrating because he and Domas in some ways are similar in that they're young, have a ton of potential. They're both centers. And in some way, they're very different. Domantas is a guy you almost always know what you're going to get. And even at the, a young age, he's always usually good for 10 to 12 points and 6 to 8 rebounds at a minimum, and of course can go over those levels. Miles, the biggest frustration, and I get it, is that sometimes he'll have 28 and 12, and then the next night we'll have 4 and 3. And obviously consistency, you hope it comes with him getting older. But I was really high on Miles on draft night. I think if you would have told anybody on draft night that at year 3 this is where he would be, I think everyone would have taken that. And so, I think for Miles, you mentioned this back with Victor, I think watching him be around Victor and watching Victor for a year and for an offseason will really help. I don't know his offseason, so I don't want to say that, he didn't take it seriously enough, but sometimes guys don't really realize maybe that there's one extra step that they can take, one extra higher level that isn't just working out hard, but it's, making a change in your game. I think Victor clearly hit a lot of that. So I'm going to say that Miles Turner comes out and has that jump people were hoping from year 2 to year 3 and year 3 to year 4. Look, he's got the ability already to shoot the ball at an elite level. He's got the ability for his position. He's got the ability to protect the rim at an elite level. It's just some of the other ancillary things around it. It's consistency. It's maybe a little bit more determination and confidence and all of those things. But I found myself defending Miles a lot of the year because I think that he's someone with a high skill set. He's a good kid. He does try. Obviously, he can't turn his body into Dwight Howard's overnight, and it's never going to be that way, and I get when it's frustrating. But it's also frustrating when he's on for other teams to try to chase him around the perimeter when he's hitting threes. So Miles is going to be my pick, and I really truly believe that he's got another step to make, and I really think he's going to make it. And I don't know if it's going to be next year or a couple of years down the road, but let's remember that Oladipo didn't really hit his until he turned 25 years old, and we're talking about a kid who just turned 22. He's still very, very young and has a high ceiling, and so Miles will be my pick.
Miles can shoot as well as any big man in the NBA. He is improving around the basket. He is only 22 years old with so much NBA experience now. Imagine if you were drafting Miles out of college right now and what he has not only in this organization but in this league. It's a solid pick, and it'll be fascinating to see how the front court develops in the future with both Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. Our group pick is going to be someone who is in a position to make a leap forward, and that is, the most improved player award. It's great when it's somebody like Victor Oladipo who has changed his game and totally made a leap past what some had expected. Many times you can improve just by nature of growing and learning and getting more opportunity. And so I think TJ Leaf is an interesting person to watch this summer, see how he comes into camp, and see whether he can be a little more confident on both ends of the court next year in just his second NBA season. And you consider the age TJ Leaf is. And I go back to when the Pacers drafted him. And I know there are going to be some who are frustrated watching OG Anunoby pick 23rd and seeing what he was able to do for the Raptors this season. But look at pretty much everyone else around TJ Leaf. Donovan Mitchell is someone for everyone who passed on Donovan Mitchell. They will be criticized. You can pretty much, I'm looking at the list right now. And so Dennis Smith Jr. was picked 9th, and everyone that was picked from him on up seemed to be a logical choice. Now, you'd still pick Donovan Mitchell above them, but in the teens, you have a lot of question marks. Justin Jackson, Justin Patton, DJ Wilson, John Collins looks like he has a bright future. Harry Giles had some injuries. So I think TJ Leaf, when the Pacers drafted him, they weren't thinking that in the 2017-18 season, he's going to be spectacular. I think they were thinking 2020, he's going to be a very solid fringe starter, maybe solid, great backup off the bench. When he's 23 or 4, with the way he shoots, with the way he plays, he's going to be a piece that you like to have. And for a draft pick at 18, I still think it's way too early to say that that's incorrect. Obviously, Kyle Kuzma and OG picked after TJ can cause fans to get frustrated. But I think TJ Leaf, and I know that some of the coaches are very, very excited about the way he plays and the way he can grow. And so I think it's natural to say DJ Leaf could be the most improved Pacer next season.
No, I think that's a good pick. It's funny because I was going through a lot of his highlights. We're putting together season and review interviews and highlights that are up on Pacers.com, and we just released TJ Leaf's today, which we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon. And I've felt this way all year, but watching him in those highlights reaffirmed this belief. He's really solid on the offensive end. His game's ready right now on the offensive end. He's cerebral. He knows, you know, the right play to make. He's more athletic than you give him credit for. His biggest issue is he's not quick enough right now to guard threes, and he's not strong enough to guard fours, and that's what he's got to figure out. You know, you look at TJ Leaf, and certainly I think he has the potential for an NBA body, but when you look at him versus Kevin Love's a tough comparison, but, you know, other stretch fours around the NBA, like Kevin Love is a grown man in that regard, and TJ Leaf still in a lot of ways looks like what would be a college sophomore. It's expected. It's natural. He's a guy that's going to be around the facility a lot this offseason, and I think could make major strides in that regard. His offensive game is really sound. It's really smooth. It's college. The example I'm about to give is college, and so you can only obviously take that for so much when it relates to how they could play in the NBA. But remember, he led a team in scoring that had Lonzo Ball on it and had a lot of talent on it. EK obviously on it as well. That was a good college team, and he was the best scorer on it. So this is a guy that has a lot of natural scoring ability. When you watch him in warmups, when you watch him in 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5s, you give him the open three and he hits it almost every time. And he's got some really natural talents on the offensive end. It's going to be the defensive end. I think his passing can use some work. But his scoring, his knowledge, his where to be, right place, right time, I'm still pretty optimistic for him. I've seen some people occasionally get down and frustrated. And I think it's natural to find like the two guys who were picked behind that you referenced that have had bigger impacts and forget about like the other 8, 9, 10 guys that haven't. But I think, get to see this guy a little bit more, and so maybe that gives us better perspective on him. But he's got some real serious potential, I think, to be an offensive weapon. But as with most guys, you have to be able to hold your own on the defensive end. And there are very few guys in this league that are terrible defenders that are good offensive players that see regular time. And if they are, it's because they are just so dynamic offensively. A Kyle Korver is maybe the best pure shooter in the NBA, so he can get away with being defensively deficient. So obviously TJ's got to get better in that category. But I like that pick. I think TJ's going to see some more time next season, and I think he's going to surprise fans and make some of them who maybe question the draft pick start to go, okay, I see what Kevin Pritchard and Nate McMillan and Chad Buchanan and Peter Dinwiddie saw when that pick happened.
I guess I'll throw it back to you with a change of topic question, but I know you've been watching the playoffs. Do you see any scenario that the Western Conference champion doesn't win the NBA Finals?
No, I don't. It's always counterintuitive to me to count out LeBron, so maybe that's a little foolish. And they have looked a lot better, and so I still, like, in my gut of guts, I'm obviously thinking that the Golden State-Houston winner is a heavy favorite. Anyway, it's hard with what, you know, I didn't think there was any way when Cleveland was down 3-1 they were going to come back to Golden State, who was just coming off a championship. But it's hard to imagine with what the Pacers were able to expose. The Pacers, a team who were a year off of having to trade their all-star and their best player and recoup what they could in a down market, that they were able to expose some serious flaws. And I know Toronto, for whatever reason, wasn't able to expose like a single flaw in those four games. But I just, it's hard for me to see it. It's hard for me to see LeBron James, if it's Cleveland, and, you know, Kevin Love, who's had some on and off games. Even if Kevin Love is Minnesota Kevin Love, Golden State is just too deep. You know, maybe if Houston were to upset Golden State, which I do think they can, I'm putting that at like 75-25. Then maybe they're, you know, some of their inexperience.
Which is your pick at 75? You think Houston's favored?
No, I'm saying 75-25 GS.
Okay.
But I do think Houston could do it. And if Houston did it, I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility that Cleveland could beat them. But no, I think the Western Conference champ is the NBA champ. You?
I agree. Celtics over Cavs. Mark it down.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, that series to me.
I can't watch Cleveland and forget about the whole season. And I know that that's what you do because it's the playoffs and yada, yada, yada. But the Pacers series, the story was that LeBron had no help. And he's gotten help in this series. But, you know, what's to say Brad Stevens isn't going to figure out a way to defend the Cavs a little bit better? And they're still weak defensively. And I know that the Celtics are severely shorthanded, and they haven't gotten by Philadelphia yet, but I think that happens in game 5 or 6. And it'll be crazy that the Celtics will be the 2 seed and the Cavs will be the 4 seed. And it'll be similar to one of those Pelicans, Trailblazers, or Pacers, Cavs first round predictions on ESPN.com because everyone will pick the Cavs. But I say, the only thing that I don't want, and at this point I think we're allowed to be fans now because we don't really have any NBA responsibilities for the next few months. I know you have WNBA responsibilities, and I look forward to hearing some of your calls on the Fever games this year. But we can just be a fan the rest of the playoffs. And the one thing that I don't want to see is Cavs-Warriors again. I know that that may be good for business and good for ratings, but it's not – not what I'm interested in seeing, and so I'd like to see a fresh matchup. And I don't think it's a big shock or surprise to say that I'm pulling against the team from Ohio.
It would just be so fascinating to me if Boston had their guys healthy. You could say even not Gordon Hayward, but it would be so fascinating because you would have these two old guards that have been dominant for the last 3 or 4 years, and then you would have these two new teams that were assembled in the offseason to challenge and be the new guard, if you will, even if it's just for a year. And both, I think, have a realistic opportunity when that might have been hard to believe that that was possible a couple of years ago. And I do think Boston can do it. I think if just like counting out LeBron James might be a fool's errand, counting out a Brad Stevens team, I think, is the same. And, you know, look, I mean, the 76ers had won something like 21 out of 22 before this series. And Boston, you know, so far has taken 3 out of 4 and threatened to sweep the series. If they had Kyrie or Hayward, I'd be willing to say I think it could happen. And I still do think it could happen. I might be willing to predict it. I'm not ready to predict it. But I think it would be fascinating. If those guys were healthy, you could have two really, really interesting, and you still very well may, really, really interesting conference finals. And, you know, I'm not going to pick against Golden State because I feel they're a little better than Houston, but I don't think they're so much better that Houston can't beat them. And remember, Houston has home court, and I'm with you. I would love to see Houston win that series. I would love to see Boston win their series. It would be a little more fun if Boston had, you know, their high-powered guys, Hayward and especially Irving, who played most of the year to go along with Horford, because that could be a really fun finals if it got to that point. But, yeah, I'm okay with mixing it up. I don't know what business says is good for. I know rivalries and excellence is typically, you know, good for a business, but I think fans are ready to see something different too, even if it doesn't mean, you know, who knows? Cleveland could make offseason moves and be right back to being the powerhouse, and I don't think Golden State's going anywhere anytime soon, but I think it'd be good for the league to say, you know, maybe these guys are top dogs in their conferences, but they're not so much that they can't be beaten. There's enough parity that they can be beaten, and I'm looking for, I don't know about you, I'm looking forward to Golden State Houston, assuming it happens. I think as much as any series I've looked forward to in the playoffs, especially in the Western Conference, for a while.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I actually do think I'm looking forward to Boston and Cleveland. I did say I wasn't going to watch the Raptors Cavs series because I was still a little salty, I guess would be a good way to describe it. But I watched some of it, and I think that you're right, that the conference finals have a chance to be really good. It's been interesting. The first round was really good. The semifinals have not been quite as competitive or entertaining. And I think it'll make up for it in the conference finals. And then we'll see what happens. The finals, many would predict, would be one-sided. But that's why that's why they play the games. And I like there to be a little bit of a March Madness feel where you don't know what's going to happen. And we saw that a little bit in that first round where nobody thought the Pelicans would sweep the Blazers. And people thought the Pacers would lose in 3. And they, you know, almost took down the Cavs. So I do like everyone to sort of feel like they go into the playoffs with a little bit of a chance. Obviously, in a best of 7 series, the better teams are going to prevail. But it should be fun to watch in the final month. And at this time, I guess we're kind of wrapping things up. I do want to say thank you to all of the Pacers fans. I think I said this on Twitter a couple different times, and it's been a great season, and the fans are part of what makes it great. It's not just the players and the wins and all the other things we get to experience, but the interaction with the fans, and over the last couple weeks and even dating back to before the season ended, I can't tell you how many times I ran into someone. This is the same type of person who maybe would have been difficult to get an NBA conversation going 2 years ago, where they struck up the conversation in me and they wanted to talk about the Pacers and they wanted to talk about the NBA and they told me how much fun they had watching that team. And we felt it, but we were so close to it. And until you kind of step back and hear from fans on Twitter or just, you know, in daily interactions with people on the street that you don't even know at the time are a Pacers fan, there is a really good thing building right now, and this season is one that I do think that sometimes seasons can blend together, but in the middle of, you know, let's say 2022 or 2025, we'll look back on this season and how special it was. And in closing, I'm looking right now at the postseason media guide that primarily the work of Chrissy Myers and Wes Kaminsky and David Benner oversees it. And it's one of the things that I always like to keep because, A, it's a database for everything that happened in that regular season as far as stats. I'm still old-fashioned and I like it printed even though it's on the internet. But the back cover has a team photo. And they always wait to take the team photo until basically after the trade deadline once the roster is pretty well finalized. There's never really a team photo taken at Media Day. And the team photo has all the players in the back row with their arms kind of arms locking around shoulders of each other. And I don't think I've ever seen at least a professional sports photo look like this. All the staff smiling, even Dan Burke has a smile on his face. And I just think, I don't know when that picture was taken, if it was, all right, guys, act like you like each other, or if it just was natural. But I think that's a photo that I might try to get a copy of and turn it into a poster because I know that the posters with the Corey Joseph play, that will live on. And everyone saw that, and that was great to make that the theme of the playoffs together. But that team photo, this is a special team, and that was a special picture, and I think it was symbolic of everything that we saw.
Yeah, I think all that is really well said. And, you know, we'll hit our off seasons here. I'll be doing some stuff with the Fever, obviously, play by play. And you got a chance to work a little bit with the greatest baseball team out there, don't you?
Absolutely. Go Cardinals. No. Fox Sports Midwest obviously is oversees Fox Sports Indiana, and they have 150 or so games. So I guess, you know, we don't take any NBA games off, but I think that they have different roles where some people take a week off here or there. And so there was an opportunity to be the dugout reporter and report on the pre and the post game show for a week, the last week of May or the week around Memorial Day. So I'll do a couple of Cardinals games in St. Louis and three in Pittsburgh. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'll probably be talking with you to get some story ideas and brush up on my knowledge of the Redbirds, because I'm more knowledgeable about the Reds, and I've decided that I don't know how much more of them I can watch this year.
Very, very cool opportunity. And we'll have, you know, I will say this, if you're listening and you're feeling a little bit of basketball disappointment that you don't have any left, if you have not come out here and had a chance to watch the Fever play, give it a chance. I did the same thing with my dad. He went and watched a game he had never been before. He really enjoyed it. Come out here, you can get a ticket, watch the Fever play over the summer. They have three of the top 14 picks. We'll have the broadcast coming up on NDY and Fox Sports Indiana. More information will come out that in a little bit. I, as we close here, I also wanted to make the same sentiment. Thank you so much to the fans. It's been a great year. It's been an unbelievable year. Our friends over at Pacers Reddit, over on Twitter, everywhere else we're listening, we are both very appreciative. Thank you very much. And I think to close, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think history is going to look pretty fondly on the 2017-2018 Indiana Pacers. We'll be around here with more coverage throughout the offseason. As always, there's free agency, there's draft. Maybe if we get bored, we'll just come in and chat about our lives.
Let's do a podcast if it's not Warriors-Cavs in the finals.
All right, I'm in.
We'll do a pre-finals podcast if it's anything but that. And if it is that, I'm going to boycott it until around draft time. Draft lottery, is that tonight too?
Good question.
I think it is, and it's crazy. A year ago, we figured this would be a big night. Doesn't even matter right now.
Isn't it good that we don't know when the draft lottery is? Like, exactly. That's a positive in itself. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. Thank you all for listening all season long. We're not coming to an end. We're just going to slow down a little bit for the off season. We'll be back talking to you in no time.
Oh, does that mean we should go at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning and do another one a la Victor Oladipo?
I'll pass.
Okay.
We will talk to you soon, though, on the Sideline Guys podcast.